there's been a battle. I believe it's been in Stratford, and there's a state rep that is pushing this. And so they're going to pass it for the unions.
Okay, I have to understand this a little bit better, because to be totally honest with you, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know something when I really don't understand the language or the history of it well enough. That's what I love about doing this show, honestly, is it's not just you learning. I get to learn every single day on this show, and I'm grateful for it. So we have been continuing to follow very closely and track this 121-page emergency certification bill that did already pass the Senate. It did already pass the House. It now is on the governor's desk. Will he do any vetoing of it? We aren't sure. This is certainly going to be one of the things, though, that I think needs to be brought to the governor's attention, because immediately after the Senate passed this bill this week, I immediately saw an alert that came from the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities, CCM, which again represents all 169 towns and cities across Connecticut. It is not a partisan group. This is literally representation of all our towns and cities. They come together, they have representation, and they talk about what's happening at their own local level, their perspective. I love this group. So when CCM heard that the Senate had passed this bill, they sounded the alarm. It said that they slipped pension offset language into Senate Bill 298, a sweeping emergency certification bill. It says legislative leaders are advancing a proposal that has failed to gain approval for nearly a decade, and for good reason. But I have to understand exactly what this is, and again, why bipartisan, it seems, municipalities have been against it. So we welcome back to the show Joe DeLong. Love chatting with him from CCM to help us understand this a little bit better. And Joe, thank you so much for your time. As I always start this broadcast off with you when I talk to you, just again, describe what CCM's role is here in the state of Connecticut.
Well, Melissa, thank you. I always enjoy being on, and CCM is basically just the private association that represents the interest of all 169 Connecticut cities and towns. We're a collective of the mayors and first selectmen and town managers, and, you know, we really come together to hear from them collectively and to represent their voices and their collective interest on how to make our community stronger.
So according to CCM, municipal officials from every corner of the state have repeatedly raised serious concerns about pension offsets and the fact that it would have great fiscal impact. It sets a horrible precedent, and that it has unintended consequences for local budgets and taxpayers. What exactly are we talking about, Joe? And really, feel free to dumb this down as much as you want, because I really want to make sure I understand this so that when I talk to the governor about this, I can really talk through this and have a good argument here. I need to just understand it better.
Yeah, absolutely, Melissa. So let me first, I usually don't do this, but let me first start off with an apology to you and your listeners, because I am not an expert on workers' compensation law. Workers' compensation law is very, very complex, and this is a workers' workers' compensation law issue. Now, I'm sorry, I just had a little bit of the morning throat here, but anyway, essentially, the way that pension offsets works is it has always been historically something that has been a subject of collective bargaining locally. And I'll start with that by saying this is one of the challenges we see with the General Assembly. They'll act like collective bargaining is sacred, but then everything that the labor unions don't get through collective bargaining, or everything that they bargain away to get something else as part of that process, then they turn and run to their friends in the General Assembly and say, hey, we'd really like to have this too. And the General Assembly would do things like this, where they'll pass a bill to take it out of the collective bargaining process and make it mandatory, which is really disingenuous to the collective bargaining process locally. If everything you give up, you're going to have to now go to the legislature and say, well, give it to us anyway. But what pension offsets essentially is it says that if an employee is off on permanent partial disability, while they're off from work, their pension is essentially calculated or offset, where it's not calculated based off of their regular salary, it's now calculated based off of what they are collecting in terms of permanent partial disability. And it does a couple things. And let me say this. There's an argument by labor that they think that's unfair. I don't disagree with their argument. I think their argument actually holds water. That's why collective bargaining makes sense here. But what it does is, number one, it provides incentive for certain employees who are off on permanent partial disability that can return to work to return to work. You know,
right. What's so the point? You're going to get paid. Right. So why would you go back?
You're going to get paid.
Right.
You get paid no matter what. Now, there's no, you know, there's no harm in you basically staying home and collecting partial disability for the rest of your career because you're going to get paid exactly the same, whether you return to work or not. The other thing that it does is the actuaries, when they do the calculations for funded pensions, the calculations are done based off of the offsets. And that's a very, very common practice. So now you're going to have communities all across the state that really worked hard to believe that their pensions were funded that are now going to find out from their actuaries, well, forget it, because of this legislative change, your pensions are no longer funded. And that is, here's the irony that nobody talks about that really, really gets me. We spent an entire year, really between sessions, talking about affordable housing and the proponents saying we have to have more affordable housing. We have to do more things to create more affordable housing. We get an affordable housing bill done. They come back into session and the very first vote that they take makes housing less affordable. It's remarkable to me how they don't equate those things. But, you know, legislation that creates new mandates that drives up property taxes is one of the main reasons why rents are not affordable in Connecticut. It's one of the main reasons why people can't afford mortgages or the escrowed mortgages. And instead of coming into session and providing mandates relief or providing additional funding to cities and towns, they determine it's an emergency to pass a provision that has literally been before the General Assembly for a decade that never passes because when people come in and really talk about the true cost of it, the General Assembly always pulls back. But it's an election year. There's, you know, a desire to curry favor with certain labor unions out on the campaign trail. And General Assembly members really believe that as property taxes go up, that that's a problem for the mayors, not for them, and that they'll never really be held accountable for it. And that's sort of what happened, you know, has happened over the last couple of days.
We are chatting with Joe DeLong of the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. And one of the biggest concerns from CCM with this sweeping emergency certification bill, it's 121 pages. It did get passage in the Senate and in the House. It's on the governor's desk. I don't know what he's going to do with it. If he's going to line item veto it, I'm not sure. But this has been a huge concern, and actually, for over a decade, it's failed to go forward. This specific provision, which looks at pension offset language, and again, Joe, I so appreciate you talking about it. It is very complicated. And I appreciate honestly hearing you say that because I think to myself, man, I must be a real idiot. I can't understand all of this. But I think you broke this down as effectively as we could. And it makes sense that this is essentially going to land on the towns and I would think cities making up this money. Right. I mean, they're going to have to, I would think taxes are going to go up to now take care of this.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And, you know, I've been told, honestly, the communities that are going to get hit hardest, you know, through workers' compensation law and are these, which are many of our smaller cities in our larger urban centers, but many of our smaller cities as well that are workers' comp self-insured because they're going to have to shoulder the entire burden of this new cost. Yeah, I mean, and let me just say this, Melissa, I'm happy to dive into what you want to dive into or where it came from, but I think the bigger issue here is if a bill has been around and has gone through the committee process and dies session after session after session since I've been here, since 2015, how did it all of a sudden become an emergency that needed to be dropped and voted on in one day?
Well, but this is why that's why I'm bringing up Stratford. So, but that is why I'm bringing that up, because, again, my understanding, and this is a lot of backdoor politics, honestly, and I can't really get into all the weeds of it, and you know, in just the short amount of time that we have. But this bill was essentially, you know, yes, to your credit, you're talking about it is an election year, no question. And we see this every single year to some degree, whether there's an election or not. But I also believe there were a lot of pushes that were going to basically be either favors or things that lawmakers needed to push for whoever it was, whether it was an election year or it was just dear friends of them or whatever the case may be. That's how this whole thing, I feel like, was crafted together. I mean, because none of it is connected to each other. You know, you've got election, you've got education, you've got warehouse requirements. It's all over the place. So when I heard that this came from Stratford, and ironically enough, every single state rep from Stratford voted for it, including the Republican, that is funny to me. Because I know it's, you know, Stratford is under new leadership. I do know that there were issues in Stratford. This was a huge sticking point, actually, in the mayoral race. Was, I want to say, it involved either former cops or former firefighters. Don't quote me on this, but it was something in regards to people who were on that were, on medical leave or whatever. They would fall into this bucket that you're talking about, and I'm wondering if that has anything to do with how this ended up in this bill this time. Because to your point, how do you have something fail for over a decade, but somehow, literally 20 days into the legislative session, this gets pushed in there? How does that happen? And I'm hearing it's all coming from Stratford. So that can't be coincidental.
Well, I haven't heard that directly. Because I guess in my role, because I'm so global statewide, mm-hmm. I stay out of a lot of the local, you know, part of the politics. And the fact that this bill has been around for so many years, it's had different proponents behind it every single year. So maybe Stratford is the driving force this year, but Stratford hasn't been the only driving force for the last decade. I think that the firefighters and the firefighters unions are a huge driving force behind this. The head of the State Firefighters Union Association, Peter Brown, is a friend of mine. And I think
I love Peter Brown
on the show.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Great guy.
Great guy.
Yeah. And I think Peter could really articulate as to why that they believe that this should be done and this is the right thing. But here's what I'll say, even as it applies to Stratford. As an election issue, as something that was important to that community, the firefighters went out, and this was a major point during the election cycle, and the voters in Stratford made a change, as you know, in terms of mayor. And as a collectively bargained issue, if it was important enough to the people of Stratford to change it, then let it change through that process. Let it change through collective bargaining. Let the new mayor who came in, who maybe campaigned more closely with the firefighters, let him do that job. Let him do his job and collectively bargain with those firefighters locals. And, you know, in the next contract, make the adjustments that were maybe campaigned on or deemed appropriate. What the General Assembly decided to do was to come in and take a process, a collective bargaining process that they claim is sacred, and swoop in an emergency bill and override contracts that were collectively bargained in good faith. And that is an awful precedent, number one. And number two, it also creates a great deal of trepidation on a municipality side going forward when it comes to collective bargaining, because they start to say it doesn't matter what we do, because whatever they don't get, they'll just go around us and go to the legislature to get. Mm-hmm. And in the end, you know, if you want to support specific groups, that's fine. If you want to support, you know, your firefighters or your local firefighters union, and you want to campaign with those folks, that's fine. I mean, that's politics. There's nothing wrong with that. But at least don't be disingenuous about it. At least look at all of your other residents who are not part of those groups and
right.
say, hey, I just want you to know that what I'm doing for them, you're going to pay for. I just want to, you know, and you may be okay with that. You may say, this is a fairness issue for firefighters, and I'm willing for my property taxes to go up. That's fine. That's a local decision. But at least be honest about it. At least go back and look at your residents and say, hey, we did this together. We got this done together. Our firefighters are going to get this new benefit. And by the way, remember this when your property tax bill goes up, because this is something that we all collectively work toward. That's the part that doesn't happen. And that's the part that frustrates me.
Right. I think we need more clarity on that, certainly. And so, Joe DeLong, I want to thank you so much for breaking this down. Again, a very complicated part of this bill that has already passed the Senate and the House. We don't know what the governor is going to do with it.